Hi everybody, it's Chris Hall here from Charity Digital. I hope you're all keeping well and staying safe. Today's episode is part of a series in response to the COVID-19 outbreak. We'll be releasing a pod every week that will help charities to A, navigate the rapid digital changes that we've all been thrust into, and B, set your charity up for digital going forward, and C, provide a platform for you to seek advice and also share your stories. Today's podcast is taken from my session at Project Everyone on April 2nd, where a bunch of charities came together to run an online festival to share guidance, insights, and expertise in the face of the current pandemic. And you can find out more about Project Everyone in the podcast description. If you have any questions you'd like to ask us about how to be more digital, or if you'd like to share how your organisation is coping with the COVID-19 environment, reach out to us at podcasts@charitydigital.org.uk or follow the link in the description. Thanks and enjoy the pod. Hello, everybody. My name is Chris Hall. I'm the marketing manager here at Charity Digital. Thank you for joining me today. If someone had said to me a month ago that I'd essentially be talking to myself in my empty kitchen with a global audience watching, I'd have called you all mad. But here we are. And I don't like to dwell on the negatives. We're all navigating these new waters at the moment. And it can be a bit of a struggle at times, but what I really do love most about the sector is that at times like these, we really do band together. And today's event sort of personifies that. I hope you're learning a lot and are ready to go back and share those learnings with colleagues and peers alike. But let's move on to what I'm really here to talk about today. And that's how we can fight crisis with content. So coronavirus has brought with it a lot of challenges, new work environments, operational shifts, and lots of noise. Inboxes and news feeds are really dominated by information about COVID-19. We're kind of inundated with letters from CEOs, service updates, and all those special offers. And they're all screaming at us saying, I'm important and I'm the one you need to look at. And it's kind of at these points of heightened saturation that audiences can get distracted quite easily or even switch off entirely. But with that as well comes opportunity. We have captive audience now, with most people confined to their homes and on digital devices more than ever before, which gives us as charities a great opportunity to engage with our donors, supporters, and our users. So today I've condensed our usual five-step content strategy framework to focus on the reactionary components that can be easily scaled into long-term strategies. And essentially those are, how to create good reactive content. And then once you have it, how to get that content in front of the right people in the right place at the right time. I think there is an important caveat here before we dive into the nuances though, and that this won't be a one-size-fits-all resource. It's really all about getting to know who your audience are and then creating authentic content that resonates with them. It's really about getting your message across as clearly as possible to the people who need to hear it. And, similarly, I'm not going to be able to deep dive into all the possible topics. I've had to leave a few things out, given that, we tried to fit this in a 30-minute time window. So step one is make good content. One way to ensure you do break through the noise is by making good content. And it does sound very simple, and that's actually because it kind of is. I think people perceive content as this beast of a thing that takes massive amounts of resource and needs dedicated specialists to remain relevant and to be constantly on the cutting edge of content creation. But to me, I think that's all a bit of a myth. When you boil content down to its core, essentially it's just about great storytelling. And like every story ever made, you need to keep two things in mind. Number one being the audience that's going to consume your content. And number two, the very story that, the story that you're going to create for that audience. So let's look at the first one. The one thing that underpins all content creation is your audience. Every piece of content that you create should be done with them in mind. To be heard, organizations need to be more like a restaurant server. You need to know your users' tastes. You need to make the right recommendations. And you need to make those recommendations when needed. But when you're not needed, you should be invisible. And charities, as charities, we're very lucky in that we usually enjoy quite a close relationship with our supporters. We collect large data sets for that, that lets us be more like a restaurant server in that sense. And from that data, we get to know quite a lot about who they are. And this can tell us how to reach them and also how to reach people like them. We know, where our users come from, how they prefer to be contacted. We know what their likes and interests are. And we know how they engage with us through what platforms and through what navigations. And we know this is just a flavor of what we know. you know, depending on the data you collect, depends on how vast your sort of user insights are. But we can then use this data to build personas. And essentially, a persona is a fictional character that communicates the primary characteristics of a group of users, which is then identified and selected as a key target through the use of segmentation data. I mean, strategically, having personas for your potential donors and supporters can make it easier for A, charities to gauge new donors, how new donors will react to certain content and campaigns, and B, it also informs us of how we should promote and pitch content to the right people in the right place at the right time. And in times such as these, it's a really quick and effective way to, you know, to make sure we're being targeted and we're reaching the people that we really need to reach. But personas are just the base level of personalization. We've come a long way from this sort of at first name phase that once was personalization. And I mean, the beauty of having all this data is the creativity allows us to have. You know, marketing is still all about building those emotional connections. And there's really no better way to create a personal connection with some between, you know, your audience and your cause than kind of having your audience being part of that story. This kind of in the biz is what's known as user-generated content, or UGC. A favorite pre-coronavirus campaign of mine is actually from the Wood Green Animal Charity. They found a quick and effective way to do user-generated content in one of their fundraising campaigns. They made the most of their followers' content by asking for them to share their own stories of pet adoption. They then included those in a personalized Instagram story with their pet's name and a really clear call to action for other supporters to go and adopt. It was a super interactive campaign that, you know, celebrated supporters and then encouraged other supporters and followers of their Instagram account to go and follow suit. I mean, the beauty of UGC is that it can take any form: video, case study, blog, podcast, making it really easy to easily attain content, even when we're in, you know, times of isolation and lockdown. Now, this is something we do ourselves, and as well within your remit as well. You know, set up Zoom interviews or Skype interviews, record them and release them as a targeted campaign. You know, ask for stories you can then turn into written content. You know, get a bunch of your users together to discuss how they've been aided by your cause, and again, capture it and then push it out as a campaign. It really is an authentic way to build trust, reliability, and re-engagement within your audience, and one we'd highly recommend. All that being said, don't underestimate the power of your audience. Within them lies, you know, your biggest flag bearers. You know, as charities, we constantly ask our users to do things for us. So make sure you're thanking them back. Well, there's no sort of concrete data to support this yet. I think it's fair to say that the likelihood of repeat donation or repeat visit or repeat purchase is increased if people feel their time, effort, and money is valued. I mean, I think a simple analogy puts this into perspective is one about holding a door open for someone. So join me in a moment of imagination, if you will. You know, it's pre-COVID-19. We're all still allowed to go to our offices. You know, you're walking in at the same time as someone else, and you hold the door open for a colleague, peer, or stranger. They walk through the door, get through, stop, turn around, give you a great big thank you. How do you feel? You know, you probably smile. You might high five, potentially a hug if you're so inclined. Either way, you'd feel a lot better for it. You know, on the flip side, you hold the door open for a stranger, peer, colleague. They walk straight through the door, and this time don't stop. They don't do so much as acknowledge your existence. And how do you feel now? Well, if you're anything like me, you'd probably be a bit cheesed off. And would either, you know, the next time it came to happen, you'd either do it with limited effort, or you actually wouldn't bother doing it at all. So how do you think a donor or a supporter feels when they receive no response and then engage with you? Or, you know, they contact you about a story, they get involved with a video, or, you know, they even donate and give money to your charity. I mean, rectifying this can be something as small as setting up a quick thank you email or you know, a simple text with a donation update, or, you know, a thank you that can help your organization stand out above everybody else and make your donor, your supporter feel much more part of the journey and much more likely to repeat. Blood.co.uk are amazing at this, and I cite them regularly. While, yes, a different type of donation, they do send thank you texts after each donation session. And then they go on to take you on this journey where they update you of the specific hospital that your, you know, your blood has been sent to before then asking you to book your next session, and then you push back into the funnel. It's really involved and dare I say, personal experience to it, and one that resonates really highly, and certainly with me as a donor and supporter. I mean, altruistic reciprocity can be a quick win way to build on donor loyalty, essentially. Charities can look at their biggest fans for help more than others at times like these, and, you know, not just for donations, but for content as well. And I'm pretty sure they'll be willing to do it. But what is important to remember is to make sure that they're a part of it and they're thanked for their time and effort. So now we have our audience front of mind. How do we create good reactionary content? And I've got three key tips for this. And my first tip is to get to decide on your message. You know, I'd like to start with a brief exercise, just quickly in as brief and concise a way as possible. So what is the message you want to get across to people? What is your mission? What do you want people to know? Jot these down quickly. You know, this is the core message that you want to get across to your audience. Everything else you do, all the content that you create should be in service to this. You don't want to lose sight of this, and any content that's not in service to this, even if it's really glossy and exciting, it's just not going to be that effective for you. You know, truly, this is actually your litmus test through this process. And if you're unsure, if you find yourself that you couldn't come up with anything, then going through this process is actually going to help you. And it does give you a starting point and gives you somewhere to build from. Tip number two is be brave. With the current saturated environment, what you've done previously might just not cut it anymore. And similarly, you might not have bothered with content previously because it is this big, scary beat. Well, now's the time. I mean, the truth is that we're all content creators in this attention economy, whether we like it or not. If you have a smartphone, you know, you're pretty much qualified for a role in content, whether that's in front of the screen or behind it. But the first step is just to simply give it a go. And my third and final tip is to kind of forget what you've been told by the experts. We're constantly told that we as humans don't have very good attention spans. You know, they're no longer than 5 seconds. But that to me is simply not true. And I think I can prove it to you with one quick exercise. Who here has watched any James Cameron or Martin Scorsese film in one sitting? They're usually 3 to 4 hours long. Who here read Sapiens or any Harry Potter book from cover to cover in a week? Who here watched all 10 episodes of Making a Murderer in one night? I know I definitely did. And who here has listened to, you know, the hour-long episodes of the Serial podcast, like back to back to back? I mean, okay, I'll stop now. But, you know, I think my point is quite clear is that, you know, we as consumers, we're creatures of binge, and we just love good content. No, and as creators, we should never really be constrained by time or format. I mean, what matters most is the content. And that's always where your focus should be. It would be on the content itself. You create good content, the rest will take care of itself. So with those three tips in mind, here are some content types that, you know, can help you break through the COVID-19 noise barriers. First up, website and blogs. I mean, unless you're great at sort of creating viral content, and by the way, this should kind of never be the goal of content creation, blog build up followings over time. But one way to elevate them above others is to make them interactive. Quizzes and polls are a great place to start. WWF Social Media held quiz was a new way for them to engage with supporters for their very first virtual Earth Hour a couple of weeks ago. They released one testing question per minute to press how well individuals know their wildlife facts. The quiz was set up on their actual Facebook page with clear links and pushbacks to visit adoption pages. I mean, this could have been something that is easily replicated or hosted within an article, blog, or website with the automatic social share buttons and links to learn more about the course. You know, for us as sort of digital leaders looking to stimulate audiences intellectually while, while asking supporters to take part in support our cause, interactive online content can be a really fun way to engage and motivate as well. Next up, I mean, I know I've certainly been enjoying them, but COVID-19 has certainly brought with it its wash of memes. You know, with many brands and organizations enjoying increased engagement, presence, and attention from adding a bit of humor to their content, potentially. Now, those of you who aren't afraid of cracking a joke can create moments of really lighthearted relief for your audience by creating or even sharing memes. You know, with the change of topic, often it's often a good way to engage supporters in a time of a bit of information overload. So memes can add that sort of lighthearted relief that we all need every now and again. Additionally, with now pretty much everybody online, a surefire way to have your content stand out in the crowd is to be SEO focused. You can kickstart this by focusing on what your readers would want to read. From there, you'll be able to define, you know, what your keywords are. These keywords can then be threaded into your content, your page title, heading, body text, URL, meta tags, file pages, image tags, anchor links, you know, you name it, all to help you climb the Google rankings. You know, by focusing on this keyword and in this sort of search first strategy and building search into digital content, websites and your blog pages, you'll find that you quickly move up towards the first page of Google and Google search, making, you know, what you do, your cause, your content, making it much more discoverable to new and existing users. You know, arguably the most important piece of content on this list is video. You know, video is no longer the next big thing. If well and truly here, it's the norm. Social platforms are constantly investing in improving their video capabilities because it's proven to drive higher engagement and retention from audiences. And I think now is a better time than ever to have a crack at it, test and check how you want to create good video content. You know, we're closer to our the things that make us creators, our phones, than ever before. You know, all of which have good quality cameras on them. You know, we're spending our days and meeting platforms like Zoom, Skype, and Teams, all of which have the function to record. You know, with that in mind, here's a few ways you can use videos. You can use them to vlog. So vlogging essentially is turning your blogs into video content. That provides, you know, more ways to digest information and, you know, more ways to get the stories you're trying to tell out there and, you know, multiple touch points essentially. We've already mentioned UGC and how your user donor case studies and interviews are a great way to reach new audiences with deep personalization. And webinars are also great educational tools to drive deeper engagement with your existing audience. You know, it's good ideas of this is like maybe you have a report you've just released, or you know, you could convene a panel to discuss its findings. You know, maybe you want to show the impact of your latest fundraising campaign or your coronavirus fundraising campaign. Have your CEO or fundraising director, or you know, both, essentially present on how you know how your audience helped you achieve all these amazing things. You can also use video to advertise your campaigns and other activities that I've already mentioned on this list. You know, short, powerful, personalized messages can really drive people to your campaigns and other content. I stumbled across Hourglass when I was through Twitter earlier today, and so they'd recently launched a series of #WeAreHourglass videos that involved staff and service users to really tell their audience how important they are at a time like now and how important they are now more than ever. And from a quick glance on Twitter, you can see that campaign has sort of garnered over 25,000 views already. Lastly, live events, you know, video capability, you know, video and live streaming gives you the capability to turn your events virtual. And, you know, you might have asked yourself the question, can your users, you know, can you turn a physical event virtual? I think if you can run a global conference virtually and provide all the video content from that, then I think you can. And then it's just about being creative. You know, can your users record their isolation fundraising run, for example, in place of the marathons? Or can you even host like a virtual quiz? You know, Zoom allows up to 500 people on there. Can you get some sort of interaction where, you know, your donors can, you know, pay £2 and get, you know, come online to be part of your videoed quiz? The one thing I would say about video is be prepared to relinquish control and to sometimes fail. You know, I think it's important to embed a culture in your team or organization or even yourself that supports experimentation. Be comfortable with the rough cut edits and homegrown feel. Yes, okay, you lose some flair, but what you do have is authenticity, captive audience. And I mean, half the fun is in the creative challenge itself. We've actually just embarked our CEO on a weekly knowledge sharing vlog on our platform, and he's using different backgrounds of Zoom every week. And we're currently on sunflowers at the moment, but God knows what will be next week. It's kind of little nuances like that create nice little personal touches that your audience really appreciate and come to love about you and your brand. And of course, if you want to have a more professional feel, you can very much still do that. but it can be more costly. To do so, you know, you tap into stock videos from sites like Shutterstock and TechDuild. They have a lot of reams and reams and reams of stock video that we can use to build into to make a video look a little bit more professional. And you can also use freelancer markets like Fiverr, you know, and stuff like animation and whiteboard videos are, you know, great paid for way of creating relevant video content at the minute as well. So I would definitely give those a look and check them out as well. Another, you know, super popular choice of content are podcasts. Now, I've been part of panels before where, you know, speakers have told charities to stay away from podcasts. And you can probably tell from my demeanor, I'm usually inclined to agree. And here's two reasons why. First one, they're usually not worth it unless you can get great sound quality, which means a recording studio, which means more time required by guests and contributors, the travel and whatnot. However, with nobody commuting, you can sacrifice on sound quality a little bit because you don't have to compete with train noises. You know, this means that you can record on platforms like Zoom, Skype, Teams, and Switch, which also means you can you require less commitment from guests and contributors because it just takes less time. So it has become a lot easier, and you know, we record weekly podcasts, like I said, and from our experience, we find it takes a lot less time and effort to create our podcast while the content is still really powerful. Second reason I tend to push charities away from podcasts is because I don't think they're always relevant for charities. And that's usually because it's, you know, it's not a tool that we use to reach new audiences and as charities, you know, you've generally got, you know, regular donors under wraps, but what you really want to do is reach those people you haven't reached yet. And podcasts aren't great for that. It's generally a content form that creates deeper engagement with existing audiences. However, as we kind of alluded to previously, and with its focus on core user and UGC, now is probably a good time to release some podcasts who interact with that core user base. You know, podcasts are a very good way to leverage that network and get them to do more for your organization. So encourage that network to donate more and bring them into your creation process that so they can celebrate themselves and celebrate with you. And, you know, you can get them to engage and act more specifically in a time where it's harder to reach new people. You know, getting started with pods is quite simple. You can get Audio Boom membership for $9.99 a month. And that will host and distribute everything to all the main channels as well. So your Apple Podcasts, your Google Podcasts, your Spotify. Once you've got that down, you can then start thinking about your flow. The flow should be mission and brand orientated. You know, essentially decides how you're going to talk about certain things and, you know, should focus on, you know, how do you want to be perceived? You know, do you want to be authentic, personable, professional, or scripted? You want to run a panel style, you know, interview process, a documentary, or like a solo radio DJ show? Do you want to be segmented or just have one long discussion? You know, the opportunities and, you know, are boundless essentially. And, you know, what I would recommend is choose a model that fits you and fits your organization and then go ahead and create it. I guarantee it'll not be right the first time. The flow will generally help inform your content, but as usual, what's more important here is the content itself. Essentially, you can be used in, you know, podcasts can be used in many of the same ways as videos. But being purely audio led allows for that ease of creation, and it's very consumption friendly. You know, your podcast can be listened to while, you know, people are on their daily run, that hour they're allowed out the house, or the daily dog walk, or even, you know, for tasks or sort of housework tasks like making dinner, cleaning, that sort of thing. And content wise, you've got plenty of choice. You can create really high level informative user centric stories, a lot like videos. You know, informative discussions with fundraising teams, or even sitting down with users to kind of future scope how things will change for your charity and how they will interact, how they will change how they interact with your charity after coronavirus. Once created, then you've got your core user persona to target the promos to, you know, and see what feedback you get from them. And then iterate. Like I said, it's highly unlikely you're going to get it right first time, but use their feedback to mold and shape your program as you go along. You know, speaking from experience, pods are truly trial and error. And, you know, they do need constant changing on that road to perfection, something that you might never achieve, by the way. But always remember to drive people to subscribe, as that's what the subscribes, the subscription and the ratings are what drive you up on the podcast pages. And always offer an easy way for users to contact you, maybe set up a dedicated podcast email or use your Twitter feed. So we've now ran through all this content. You've got reams and reams of content. It's coming out the rafters. Now you have it. The next question is, what do you do with it? But again, the most important questions here are, where are my audience and how can I reach new audiences? So email is often the most rewarding outreach tool in a marketer's arsenal, especially when looking to reach existing users. But it's often the most saturated in times like now. But the key to winning at email is not to be spammy, it's to be engaging and be relevant. But here are some of our simple but effective tips to stand out above the crowd. Be targeted. Don't mass market a whole databases. Use your personas to create specific segments based on interest. This will boost your open rates and will really help you avoid being spammy. Be personal. Use the dynamic functions within your email, the first name, location, and so on. And marry these to your message and your voice and your tone. The essence of your content will be what drives people to engage with you. So really focus on that personalization and in message element within your emails. Be original as well. Don't be like, everybody else. Use humor, emojis, or something else that's pertinent to who you are as an organization to make your email stand out in an inbox. And build this into your brand to make for a more inclusive email experience. As we've kind of mentioned already, test, and test some more. Subject lines and content, both. A-B test everything. Our general recommendations are, five different subject lines for each email. And then test also your content within them. The length, the variety of your content. Does it perform better with images in it or without images? Does it perform better with long form or short form text? All this will help you create more engaging emails as you push forward. And be iterative, of course. Learn from the metrics at your disposal. We have a lot of data from the emails we send out. And once you have that, constantly adapt to what those metrics are telling you. A poor open rate means bad subject lines, and a poor click-through rate means, you need to double-check your content and mess around and play and test with that a little bit more. Onto the ever-grown beast that is social media. Social is a great way to speak to a number of different audiences. And if applicable, it may be good to use all. But essentially, your audience should dictate what platform you use and how you should use it. For example, you might solicit more philanthropic donations with a more professional tone on LinkedIn. You might take a more direct tone for one-off donations on Twitter. Or even a more millennial tone a more millennial focused and authentic nature on the likes of Instagram and TikTok, where the younger audiences are. And then there's YouTube. Video needs promoting, and there's no better place than YouTube. Create playlists and content groups based on, topics or form. Embed these into sites, blogs, and social, and then share them with the core users for feedback. Add insightful questions to encourage comments in the comment sections. And always remember to add clear CTAs to descriptions. That'll encourage engagement and help achieve your campaign goals. I mean, all this stuff on social is being done to death, which is why I don't kind of want to dwell too much on it. But the truth is, you only really see what works best when you kind of get out there and have a go. Test and iterate is kind of the three words of the session at the minute, to be honest, and I'm sure it's etched in your brain by now. But like I said, the key point is stop posting and start learning. Groups and stories are also like new ways of engaging audiences on social. For the few of you who are still, I've still got great engagement on Facebook. I applaud you. Well done. That's great. But Facebook algorithms are making it increasingly hard to reach new followers. But this has opened up a new avenue for community building. Groups can be a great way to build your donor community. Think back to UGC and core users we talked about earlier. Inviting them or event attendees to your group gives you a constant active audience of your biggest fans that you can, constantly reach out to, engage and ask them for help. But don't forget to thank them and provide something in return. Stories are also a great way to engage in quick, intimate experiences. with your audience. And, you know, and they're well known for increasing brand awareness, increasing website views, and also creating constant engagement with followers. You know, we already mentioned how the word green animal charity are used in Instagram stories, but there are plenty more ways you can use them in your organization. And, you know, you have the creative license to go off and do that. Live streaming is another great way to get video content in front of donors. You know, other than just creating recorded content, charities are now running their own live streaming events to replace physical fundraising and marketing initiatives. And they're doing this in a few different ways. Live how-tos, educational Q&A sessions, or expert interviews, a lot like some of the video opportunities we talked about earlier. Again, mission impact stories like, you know, live animal cameras for adoption centres, you know, or a day in the life of a volunteer. So that's something that can be done, or service users, something that can be done remotely as well. Again, by engaging with and asking your core user base. Also, a one I've seen quite recently, one that's I think is really, really useful, are, you know, live streaming music concerts, you know, entertainment gigs like stand-up comedy, that sort of thing, or cultural exhibits. You know, if you're from a more heritage-based charity, so like a museum or something like that, virtual tours are a great way to continue engaging with your audience and turning them into fundraising initiatives as well. I mean, speaking to a live, speaking live to a captive audience allows charities to, what it really does is allow us to replicate those personal fundraising interactions we've all got used to, but through a digital portal. Again, we're just, it's another great way to interact with people. Lastly, if you can, make the most of paid advertisements. Social ads can target, you know, specific audience personas and lookalike audiences to help reach new donors. And similarly, with targeting ads can push specific messages to those who visited your specific pages on your site but didn't take action. For example, WWF might retarget Jaguar adoptions to people who visited the Jaguar page, Panda adoptions to those who visited the Panda page, you know, penguin adoption to those who visit the penguin page, and so on and so forth. And while it's very much a pay-to-play game, results do speak for themselves. Great retargeting ad campaigns, you know, should garnish like hundreds of thousands, sometimes millions of impressions. And then, you know, a really good one will hover between 3% and 5% from the click-through rate with a really low cost per click, low sort of P range. If you have a budget, I would really recommend looking into this. It's a really effective way to bring people back who didn't engage the first time, and you can constantly iterate and test that with, you know, flipping assets in and out and stuff, and seeing what really resonates more to define your campaign, your retargeting campaign goals and outputs as well. So we've kind of come full circle. I think if there's three things I'd like you all to sort of go away and have a crack on in the back of today's session, then you could probably all get some yourself. But for me, it would be these. Go mine your audience data. You know, see what you learn, see what personas you create, and see what your audience is telling you. This will really help you inform your campaigns and your new, you know, your fundraising campaigns in a new digital world. Go make a video. You know, be it as sort of B-rated as it is. Go make one, decide on the content, make sure it's really, really high level, really, really, really relevant. Sorry, one, really relevant, a bit of a tongue twister. And then push it out, go give it a try. You know, what was it? I'd really be interested to know what you decided to settle on and what was all about and what results it drove. And then the third one, as you know, we talked about core users. It's core users and UGC a lot. It's involve your users in a piece of content. You know, did it resonate more with your audience? You know, how did your users like being involved? I want to know all these things, and do feel free, please, to let me know how you got on. As part of our COVID-19 response to Charity Digital, we are running a campaign where we're asking for charities to share their stories with us. I'd love to hear how you got on with some of this content. We know with some of these new content initiatives. So if you would like to reach out and share your story, please feel free to do so. Thanks for joining me today. I really do hope you've learned something, and I hope you go on to be brave and to go experiment with the content and you know, really push through those noise barriers and not only get your cause in front of donors, but get yourself in front of the charities that so desperately need you in times like these as well. If you've got a moment to do so, please go and like and subscribe to our podcast through your usual podcast provider. This will help you keep in the know for more of our COVID-19 podcast series that's dropping in the next few weeks. And of course, if you do want to ask us a question or share with us how you're combating coronavirus in your organisation, please reach out to us at podcasts@charitydigital.org.uk. Thanks very much again, and we'll see you soon.
Hey, it's Joel here from Charity Digital. Thanks for downloading the pod. Get access to over hundreds of free or heavily discounted products that can help your charity with everything from fundraising to security. We have helped 60,000 charities save nearly 300 million in costs, and we're just getting started. Find out if your charity is eligible for our exchange program at charitydigitalexchange.org.